Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please. To John Rothstein, please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Later in this show, we will be joined by Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner. We want you to check us out on iTunes. Give us a review of the product we're bringing to you each and every week of the calendar year. Also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook and hit me up on Twitter. Ask me your question right now today on terms of what's on your mind in the college basketball world. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by offering an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. A Casper mattress provides resilience and long-lasting supportive comfort. Casper's mattress is one of a kind. It has just the right sink, just the right bounce. Two technologies, a hybrid of latex foam and memory foam. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Statistically, lying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality you spend a third of your life on. $500 for a twin-size mattress and $950 for a king-size mattress. Comparing that to industry averages, that's an outstanding price point. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/hoops, all capitals, and using my code HOOPS. That's www.casper.com/hoops and enter promo code HOOPS. Again, all in capitals. Terms and conditions apply. And as we mentioned, we are going to be joined by Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner later in this show. And I think one thing that it's important to spend time on right now out of the gate is what goes in to head coaching searches in college basketball, because to me, this is one of the more interesting parts of my job, because there are so many different layers and there are so many different things that go into placing a head coach. And certain hires work out, other hires do not work out, but I think we've seen really in the last couple of weeks a couple of interesting dynamics that need to be pointed out. Now, I want to start with what has happened at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, at UNLV, pretty much over the last 12 months. Let's rewind back to the end of last season. There was a lot of talk that UNLV was going to part ways with Dave Rice, an alum, a member of the 1990 National Championship team. And Tina Kunzer-Murphy, the athletic director of UNLV, made the decision to give Dave Rice one more season and not hire Ben Howland, who was waiting in the wings, itching to take the UNLV job, for significantly less than he was making at UCLA. He was out of coaching for 2 years. He wanted the UNLV job, and many people, including myself, had information that that was going to happen. But Tina Kunzer-Murphy, the AD at UNLV, decided to give Dave Rice the opportunity to coach his team for one more year in an effort to bring UNLV back to relevance and have a team that could play in the NCAA tournament. Ben Howland, days after that situation, did not work out at UNLV, took the head coaching job at Mississippi State, and Mississippi State, since that hire, has signed Malik Newman, who was, you know, a top 10 prospect in the class of 2015, and then the 2016 class that Mississippi State has put together is ranked in the top 5 of most recruiting services. That's what's happened since Tina Kunzer-Murphy passed on Ben Howland. Then we saw UNLV have moments of promise early in the season. They beat Indiana and Maui. They beat Oregon in Las Vegas, and it looked like things were going back on an upward trajectory in terms of the Running Rebels. Then UNLV stumbled at the start of Mountain West play, and Tina Kunzer-Murphy decided to pull the plug on Dave Rice in midseason. Now, I don't ever understand what goes into firing a coach in midseason, but I've never been an advocate of that, especially in college basketball, where chemistry and camaraderie is so important. It's important at the highest of levels, because you need to have a team intact from the start of practice that is going to be cohesive and is going to believe. This is not the NBA where you fire coaches midseason. it's not the same dynamic. So we saw Todd Simon take over on an interim level, and the buzzer in college basketball circles was that UNLV was going to pay for a big-time coach. UNLV was finally going to charter and fly private and be in a situation where it wasn't just going to be a five-star brand. It was going to be a five-star operation, because anybody that's covered college basketball and knows the ins and the outs of the sport is well aware, okay, of what goes in to a top flight job. You have to have resources. You have to travel privately for recruiting. You have to be able to pay a head coach and pay a staff. Now, another thing, okay, that you have to look at in terms of UNLV's resource management, Dave Rice was fired, and he still is going to be paid for UNLV moving forward next season, and so were some of the assistant coaches until they got other jobs. So UNLV was aiming to add a big-time head coach. Rick Pitino said no. Jamie Dixon said no, he went to TCU. They went after Mick Cronin hard. Mick Cronin had an interest in the job. He went out to Las Vegas. He wined and dined on the strip with everybody there. All of a sudden, he decided it was better to stay at his alma mater, Cincinnati, where he had a ready-made NCAA tournament team, and roll the dice in his home city rather than go take on the rebuilding project that is the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. So once Mick Cronin left UNLV at the altar when they thought they might have had him, Chris Beard, who did a great job at Arkansas Little Rock, became the target, and he became the head coach. But the fit just didn't seem right. The fit just didn't seem like it was going to work. And we saw several players, once that hire was made, Pat McCaw, Derek Jones, Chris Obekpa, leave UNLV. And right now, Chris Beard, since that time, has left UNLV after 19 days, okay, to be the head coach at Texas Tech, where he was an assistant for 10 years under Bob Knight. And since then, UNLV moved swiftly to hire Marvin Menzies, who did a great job at New Mexico State, is a disciple of Rick Pitino, okay, and should be somebody who fits the Vegas profile because he wants to be there. He worked for Rick Pitino. He knows what it's going to take in terms of who he has to deal with in Las Vegas to get this thing back rolling. But right now, UNLV only has two scholarship players in its program, and a third scholarship player, Ben Carter, okay, is debating leaving as an immediately eligible grad transfer. A source close to Carter told me on Monday that he's planning to take visits to Arizona, Arizona State, Michigan State, North Carolina State, and Miami. So right now, Marvin Menzies goes to UNLV, and he inherits a team at UNLV, one of the strongest brands in college basketball, in my opinion, in terms of the history. But he inherits a team with two scholarship players and a third one in Ben Carter, who's coming off a torn ACL, is on the fence. UNLV, to me, growing up in the era that I did, represented, okay, a strong brand. A brand maybe not as big as Duke or Carolina, but a brand that screamed of relevancy at the highest level, because that it could pack the Thomas and Mack Center and you would have 19,000 people, like an NBA game, chanting, "Rebels, Rebels." And now all of a sudden UNLV is getting shunned by the Arkansas Little Rock coach who wanted to go to Texas Tech. Now UNLV is in a situation where Marvin Menzies and whoever he hires for his staff is going to have to roll up their sleeves just to field the roster. Remember, Tino Kunzer-Murphy could have parted ways with Dave Rice and hired Ben Halland, and I firmly believe UNLV wouldn't have just been an NCAA tournament team. They would have won in the NCAA tournament. And now we have seen one of the weirdest coaching processes that I've ever seen. And I think Marvin Menzies is going to do a great job at UNLV, and we hope to have him on the College Hoops Today podcast in the coming weeks. But it's just very bizarre what goes into this. We see search firms get involved and place people in weird situations. We see weird fits. Now, you have a situation, the Tubby Smith situation in Memphis, which gives Memphis instant credibility because you're adding a coach that won a national championship. And the Georgia Tech hire with Josh Pastner, it's unique for a number of reasons. We're going to find out all of them as Josh Pastner joins us next right here on the College Hoops Today podcast. The coaching carousel always provides interesting theater in college basketball, and one of the spins that really made headlines was Georgia Tech hiring Josh Pastner away from Memphis, and Coach Pastner joins us now. And Josh, my first question is, how weird is it to be introduced as the head coach of Georgia Tech after 7 years of owning that title at Memphis?
You know, it's not weird at all, John. It's a really neat thing. You have an opportunity to coach in the ACC, which is, besides the NBA, the best basketball in the country. And you have an opportunity to compete against the very best. And that's an exciting time. And I think the programs has an opportunity to be really, really good. It's going to be a rebuild. It's going to take some time. Probably going to take a step backwards to go two steps forward. But my 7 years at Memphis, loved every second of it, gave me an opportunity to really grow and be, you know, have a clear picture of what I want to achieve and how I want to get there. And so I'm excited to bring that to Georgia Tech.
From what you told me, this process happened very quickly. Take us inside the courtship and what Georgia Tech's vision was when you were first approached about the job.
Well, John, it was quick. It happened fast. It wasn't a long, drawn-out process. I mean, things happened within hours, basically. And, and you know, they wanted to move quick, and so it moved quick. So there wasn't a lot of time to stop and to rest. In fact, on the Thursday of the first live day or evaluation day, after the Final Four was over, I was on the road recruiting. And for Memphis, you know, my focus was on Memphis. I didn't know this had all come, you know, to fruition, and it ended up coming and making it and ended up working out. And then we got to the wee hours of the night, in that Thursday night and the morning, Friday morning. And the next thing you know, I was on a plane to Atlanta for the press conference to become the next coach of Georgia Tech.
Now, the elephant in the room when you were at Memphis was the fact that you were the guy that followed John Calipari. How exciting is it for you not to be in that position again?
Well, look, I think Memphis is probably the most intense job in all of college basketball, and that includes Kentucky, because it's different. Memphis is in the most heated, intense, and, you know, under a microscope job there is in the country. I truly believe that. I really, truly believe that. In a 50-mile radius, maybe not on a national scene, not on a national scene. I'm just talking on a 50-mile radius. And, you know, look, I was an assistant with Coach Cal. We had a great run. And when I took over, I was following a guy that had, in the 4 years previous for me to getting the head job, had the greatest run in the history of college basketball, had the most wins in a 4 year period than any other 4 year run in the history of anybody. And that includes Bobby Knight, John Wood, you know, anybody. Mike Krzyzewski, it didn't matter. So that's what I was following. And so it was at 31 years of age when you take over the job. And that's what you're following. That's not an easy thing to do. It's hard. It's intense. And every decision you make, you're debated. You're under a microscope. You're under an intense magnifying glass lens. And so where most coaches in your first head job, you have a chance to grow. You can make some mistakes. Nobody knows about it. In the situation where I was at, because nobody wanted to follow him, I was probably the last man standing to get the job. I was, everything I did was in the, you know, was in a 24/7 news cycle in a 50-mile radius.
Right.
And I've been through it. I understand it. I get it. And we were very successful. We won 70% of our games. We had a lot of great success on and off the floor, and it all brings me to this great opportunity here at Georgia Tech.
You know, Josh, I'm curious, what's the biggest thing Coach Calipari told you about the vacancy at Georgia Tech when you two talked about this venture?
He thought it was a great job, Georgia Tech. Coach Cal, we talked about 45 minutes about it. Thought it was a big-time job. He knows it's going to take some time to rebuild, so it's going to take time. We talked about, obviously, Coach Kremins and Coach Yu with the job that they've done. And Coach Gregory did a nice job, obviously, with the culture and everything. So, but it's going to be a rebuild. It's going to take time to get it back to where I want it, to Georgia Tech. Fans and alumni and faculty want it, and the city of Atlanta wants to be back. So we're going to get there. It's just going to take a little time. And, you know, we've got to put together multiple recruiting classes. Obviously, for 16 recruiting is done. I mean, the 2016 recruiting is pretty much done other than fifth-year transfers. So to really build it back, they're going to have to put two or three classes together, the 17 class, the 18 class, the 19 class, so you have a sustainable championship-level program, and that's the goal. So we're going to get there. It's just we got to get there in steps and not try to get past the step. We got to do it the right way, no quick fixes, and then build it so it's very sustainable for the long term.
Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. And Josh, there are positives and negatives when you're the head coach at Memphis, but when you were with the Tigers, you coached in both Conference USA and the American Conference. Georgia Tech is in the best basketball league in the country, the ACC. Why leave Memphis for a job that's going to be significantly harder in terms of potentially making the NCAA tournament on an annual basis?
Well, you just said it. It's the best basketball league in the country. Why wouldn't you want to be in the best basketball league in the country? And I love the challenge of the opportunity to build something. I mean, you're building something from the bottom. You're laying a foundation. You're building something from the bottom to build it up. And I love that excitement. I'm enthused about that. I love the challenge with that. And you know, for me, it was just the timing was perfect. It was a wonderful opportunity, and I think it's I've been going on fumes since I got the job, but I've loved every second of it.
Georgia Tech has only been in the NCAA tournament five times in the last 16 years. As you've studied the history of this program, why do you think it struggled to consistently be in the upper tier of the ACC?
Well, listen, I mean, you said it. The ACC is a great league. Coach Kremen's had it rolling, and Coach Hewitt had it rolling, and so it's going to take some time. I think the best way to get the league built back or get the job built back to where those guys had it, you're going to have to recruit at a high level. You're going to have to put multiple recruiting classes together. That doesn't mean that you're going to get every single kid, every single prospect that you want, and that doesn't mean every prospect's the right fit for Georgia Tech. But you got to get the right ones at a high level, and it gives you a better opportunity to do that. I mean, you go through the locker room into the hallway into the locker room, and you see all the pros that have played at Georgia Tech. I mean, I'll put Georgia Tech alumni up against pretty much any other school in the country's alumni. I mean, it is high level, and especially the guards. Mm-hmm. Goodness gracious, the guards that they've had here. You know, I've been fortunate. I was at Arizona. They used to call it point guard U. They called Memphis, I was at Memphis, guard U. I mean, this is a combination of both guard U and point guard U. And I think it starts, you've got to get great perimeter players. And they have the background with the alumni base that have played here to be able to do that.
How much do you think the type of student-athlete you're going to potentially recruit change at Georgia Tech compared to what you were recruiting at Memphis?
Well, it's different. I mean, Georgia Tech, one of six graduates end up becoming a millionaire in their lifetime. It's a very, very strong school, really good school. And not that Memphis isn't. It's just, Georgia Tech's, the best in the country in engineering. And look, I've always said this, all universities are good. There's no such thing as a bad professor or a bad university. I mean, everybody is good. But a school like Tech, when you look at those stats, one of six graduates are end up being a millionaire, and it's the number one school in the world for engineering. And so it's very, very, very strong. So, look, Memphis was strong, too, academically, and they've got great academic people there, professors and everything else. It's just, you know, when you're looking at some of those numbers with the Georgia Tech and you look at some of those stats, it's really exciting.
No, it's exciting, and so is the competition you're going to have in the ACC. And when you're thinking about coaching against guys like Rick Pitino, Tony Bennett, Coach K, Jim Boeheim, Roy Williams on a regular basis, you're obviously going to have to be flanked by some pretty talented people yourself. I know you haven't hired anybody yet on staff, but in your own private thoughts, what are you looking for in terms of the makeup of your staff at Georgia Tech?
Well, I haven't hired anyone yet. I'm going to take my time. I'm in no rush. I want to make sure I make the right hires, so I'm going to be very meticulous and work with you know, my athletic director and being a partnership with him, making sure we make the right hires. So I'm going to really just, you know, be slow and make sure I make the right ones. And look, there's obviously Hall of Fame coaches in our league. There's going to be future Hall of Fame guys that are coaching in the league. But in the end, you know, you're as much respect as you with all those coaches, the Hall of Famers and future Hall of Famers in the league. I'm not the one playing either as the coach. It's the personnel on the floor. And it's not as much as always the X's and O's. It's the Jimmys and Joes, and we've got to get really good. You know, we got to get really good guys. That's important. That fit the Georgia Tech mission, but also they're also at the level to come and compete at a championship level in the ACC, and that's going to take time. Again, it's going to take time. I recognize that, but I believe our vision and mission will allow us to get there in time.
Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. And Josh, everybody grows in their own vocation over time, and it's part of evolving. In your own opinion, what's the biggest way in which you've changed as a coach since you first took over the Memphis job 7 years ago?
John, I'm a better coach today than I was when I took over my first year at Memphis. I hope to be a better coach 7 years from now at Georgia Tech than I was when I first came to Georgia Tech. That's just part of the maturation and the growing process. And, you know, I think, like I mentioned earlier in our talk here, you know, you can grow and learn and make some mistakes most times in your first job, and it's not always debated and talked about and under a magnifying glass. Every decision, every time you come out of a timeout, what you do at a halftime, you know, that's usually you have a chance to work through some things under the radar. I did. However, I learned a lot. And I have more of a clear vision than I've ever had on how I wanted to get it done, what needs to be done, the direction it needs to be done in. And I'm excited to take those learning experiences and move it forward into this Georgia Tech job.
If there was something you could do differently looking back on your time at Memphis, what would it be?
You know, something that I could do differently, I don't have any regrets. Because you know it was all part of the growth process, you know, I don't know if I would have done anything really differently. I think I've grown. It's all part of the maturation process as I look back on it. There's a couple things in my mind that I'd rather not share publicly that I think that maybe I would have done this over that or that over this differently, that maybe would have resulted in a few more wins here and there, to be honest with you. But I'd keep that more just on my own private side. Though, John, we still won, like I said, a lot of games, and we had very good success. And, guys, we did it, you know, the right way on and off the court, and which is we ran a great program. And proud of our program, and looking forward to our next, you know, venture, you know, here at Georgia Tech.
No question. I think the thing that's interesting here, Josh, is like you're no longer in the fishbowl like you were in Memphis. And I'm curious, if you had the chance to give Tubby Smith some advice on what he's going to be dealing with on a daily basis, what would you tell him if you were able to have that talk?
Well, I saw Coach Smith in New York. I don't think Coach Smith needs too much of my help. The guy's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. I mean, the guy's won a national championship, has taken 5 or 6 schools to the NCAA tournament. He's as good of a human being in the game as there is. Obviously an amazing coach. He'll go in there and do great. And he's going to end up, you know, having very good success. And Memphis is a great job. It's a great job. There's no denying it. And they're in a great league. The American's a very good basketball league. So he'll do very, very well. And he doesn't need too much advice from me, but I did see him in New York and we chatted briefly.
Josh, final thing for me, you know, it was a very unique situation when you first became a head coach, and you have talked about that really since the day that it happened. But for you right now, how much more peace of mind do you have internally, considering the fact that you're so much more ready to be in the position you're in now versus when you got the call that you were taking over for John Calipari at Memphis?
Well, I'm at more of a peace today than I was when I took over. And you got to remember, I didn't even think about being the coach at Memphis at the time. People used to ask me, what's it like working for Calipari? And I used to tell people, the guy that follows this guy is crazy. I mean, for the success that he was having. And I ended up being the crazy guy to follow him. And so when you take over something like that, you're just, I mean, my head is spinning right now. And but the difference is I've been in it for a long time as a head coach, so I get it. That then, even though I was a head coach in AAU basketball, and there's some similarities, obviously not the same level, but you're still a head coach, you're still dealing with the same type of athlete. But when you become a coach at like at a school like Memphis or a school like Georgia Tech, you're more than just a coach. You're a CEO. You're in charge of the entire program. And usually when you take something over, like I did there at Memphis, when you're 31, if it was General Motors, you would have a month to shadow the right. CEO, and then they kind of gradually give it to you. That doesn't happen in the world of sports. You take it over and you're just on a run, and you're just flying. And I was by myself there for a long time before I hired staff. So it's all part of it. I'm definitely at more of a peace today because I've been through it, but it's all part of it. It's a different job and taking over Georgia Tech than I did taking over Memphis, but excited for the challenge to build this thing back.
Well, Josh, it's going to be a lot of fun to cover. Appreciate you carving out some time for us during your busy schedule. Best of luck in the spring recruiting period.
John, thank you. Always got time for you, my man. You're one of the great guys in the business. You know that.
All right, thanks. That's Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pazner. This is the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I'd like to thank Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pazner for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Also wants you to check us out on iTunes. Give us a review of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. And we're going to take some questions right now from social media. Again, I am at John Rothstein, J-O-N. The first question comes from Gregory Sanderson. He says, John, what does Hamilton's NBA decision mean for UConn next year? And I think really right now when you look at Daniel Hamilton putting his name in the NBA draft with an agent, that means that VCU transfer Terry Larrier will be in a situation where he could potentially start for UConn at power forward. That's a name to keep an eye on. The next question comes from Nick Coker. His question is, John, how far will Virginia Tech go next season in year three under Buzz Williams? And Nick, my answer is this. I had Virginia Tech in my top 25 to start next season. At the end of next year, I'm going to reevaluate things in May when we find out who's staying, who's going in the 2016 NBA draft, but I think the expectation right now, if you are a fan of Virginia Tech, is to be in a situation where you're competing for an NCAA tournament bid. I'd like to hit some news and notes right now around the world of college basketball. I'm going to start in the American Conference, and I think one thing you need to look at when you're really taking inventory of this league moving forward, there were three new hires in this league during the offseason. Tubby Smith at Memphis, Johnny Dawkins at Central Florida, and Mike Dunleavy Sr. at Tulane. So you added a coach that won a national championship in Tubby Smith, another coach that led a team to a Sweet 16 in 2014 in Johnny Dawkins, and Mike Dunleavy Sr., who has coached four NBA teams. Those three guys join a roster of coaches that already features two coaches that have won national championships, Larry Brown and Kevin Ollie. Another coach that's led a program to a Final Four in Kelvin Sampson when he was at Indiana in 2002. And then other coaches who also have their own strong list of accolades. Mick Cronin's led Cincinnati to six NCAA tournaments and a Sweet 16 appearance in 2012. Frank Haith was National Coach of the Year in 2012 at Missouri. And Fran Dunphy at Temple is the all-time winningest coach in the history of the Big Five. That says something about the coaching in that conference. Now, another thing to keep an eye on, and I wrote this week in my column on CBSSports.com, you're always trying to project ahead to next season, and you're always trying to get a feel for conferences. Right now, I don't see any clear-cut challenger to Kentucky in the SEC. For years, when Billy Donovan was at Florida, okay, we saw Kentucky and Florida always 1-2 in the SEC. That is not the case anymore. John Calipari, again, bringing a loaded recruiting class. De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk, Wenyen Gabriel, Bam Adebayo. He should probably get Isaiah Briscoe and Marcus Lee back after they go through the NBA draft combine process. But I'm not seeing right now a clear-cut second challenger to Kentucky in the SEC. Vanderbilt, in year one under Bryce Drew, is going to lose Wade Baldwin and Damian Jones to the NBA. Texas A&M lost four proud veterans from a team that split the regular season title with Kentucky. Mississippi State and Auburn, probably a year away. Everybody else right now kind of playing for second. When I look at the SEC, I see Kentucky on an island by itself. And obviously, I saw some of Kentucky's guys at the Jordan Brand Classic game last Friday at the Barclays Center. The guys that stood out for me for that game was Bam Adebayo, who, again, looks like he could go into an NBA game right now and have an impact at power forward. He'll be at Kentucky. He has that type of physical frame. And also Jonathan Isaac, the 6'9 small forward, headed to Florida State. In terms of guys that were ready, who looked like they could play in an NBA game right now, it's Jonathan Isaac of Florida State and also Bam Adebayo from Kentucky. So those are two names to keep an eye on. And just a scheduling note right now to wrap things up, Virginia and Villanova are going to play the back end of a home-and-home series next year in Philadelphia. Villanova is going to play the game on January 29th, which is a Sunday, against Virginia. Jay Wright has told me over the past couple of years that he has liked the idea of playing a quality mid-season game during conference play against an out-of-conference opponent as a way to prepare his team for the NCAA tournament. We saw this past season Villanova go on the road and play Temple and have a convincing win on the road. We're going to see the same thing this year. Villanova is going to go through about a month of Big East play, and then they will host Virginia. If you remember last year, it was a tight game for about 36 minutes, and then Virginia wound up pulling away and getting the victory. But Villanova stepping up in its non-conference schedule this past year, playing Virginia, playing Oklahoma, ultimately made a big difference when it mattered most, and that's when the Cats played in the NCAA tournament. Because one thing I will always remember when I look back on this run, Villanova was a much different team in the NCAA tournament than it was in the regular season, and also than it was in the Big East tournament. And I believe that the schedule had a lot to do with that. We'd like to thank Georgia Tech head coach Josh Pastner for joining the College Hoops Today podcast. We will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.